just want to pick up very quickly a verse from the reading we've just heard from the letter to Peter, where he says, "In your hearts, set apart Jesus Christ as Lord. Always be ready to make your defense to anyone who demands from you an accounting for the hope that is in you." As you know, we're at 200 years now since the gospel was first preached in these lands. And I think not many of us really are in any doubt that the gospel needs to be preached afresh. There's a certain sense in which the church, in many respects, is looking as if it's a wee bit on its last legs here and there. And perhaps now is the time to preach the gospel afresh. Actually, it should be preached in every age. It should be preached at all times. And in fact, it should always be upon our lips. But what is the gospel? What is the good news? I must admit, I've spoken with various people. I haven't answered the question directly myself, but spoken with various people who I thought would be able to give a very erudite and clear answer to it, and they've kind of stumbled around. I just want to suggest a couple of things. Firstly, I'd like to just draw your attention back to a couple of incidents from the gospel that we're very aware of. The first one would be that famous incident between, remember, Martha and Mary, the story of Martha and Mary. And we kind of think that that story is all about people who are very active Christians and those who are contemplative Christians. But actually, that's completely to miss the point. Utterly to miss the point, you see. So what happens is Jesus comes to call. There's Martha, there's Mary. Martha is busy running around the house getting the table set, and Mary is there sat paying attention to Jesus. You see? And Jesus rebukes Martha and says, you know, you're upset and worried by many things. Because, of course, she says, come on, get my sister to come and help. She says, oh, you're upset and worried by many things. And Jesus rebukes her. And then says, Mary has chosen the better part. There is only one thing necessary, and it won't be taken away from her. So does that mean we've got to be very contemplative, meditative? Well, no. We've got to do what Mary is doing, which is pay attention to Jesus. And another incident that we're very familiar with, particularly, of course, in this season of Easter. It's one that should be, in a sense, partly in the forefront of our imagination as Christians, is that encounter of Jesus with Peter on the shore. So when they meet on the shore and Jesus restores Peter, you'll remember, so Peter has denied Jesus three times, and then Jesus restores him. And how does he restore him? What's the question that Jesus asks of Peter? Is it, are you sorry for what you've done? No. It's, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? This is the question. What is the heart of the good news that was preached in this land 200 years ago and that the church is continued to preach? Well, the answer is found in Jesus Christ. The answer is found in Jesus. And you might say, well, what is the answer? And I want to say, actually, in response to that, well, how about we allow Jesus to tell us what the answer is? Isn't the best idea, actually, rather than try and give people a message, actually to introduce them to the person of Jesus Christ and let them discover the good news for themselves? It's that reading from we had from the Acts of the Apostles. There's this, here is St. Paul. And he's gone to Athens, and we miss the beginning of that chapter, because when he first turns up in Athens, he turns up and the whole place is full of idols. There's idols and statues to every god under the sun. And Paul, as a devout Jew, as a God-fearer, he says his heart was distressed because he just saw all these things, the ways in which people were abasing their lives. You see, he just saw this, and as a Jew, is very wired against idolatry. I think it's something we've lost sensitivity for. I wonder if we have distress, in a sense, for the way in which people, as it were, spend their lives. Not in what we might call gratuitous sin, but just the things that people just invest all their meaning and their hope in. when actually we have this wonderful treasure of the gospel found in Jesus Christ. So Paul is distressed, and well, the thing is amongst the Greeks is that they love having a good talk about things. You know, so they sit down and they debate, and it reminds me rather of a lady who was, she was the wife of a curate in a parish where Sarah and I, when we first got married, we lived in this town, and one of the churches had this young curate, and they were quite intrigued in these new young folks who would be coming along to church, so we were invited, I think primarily because they wanted us to be babysitters for their children, but anyway, but we were invited along, And it was interesting, really, because I thought for a moment that this guy's wife was really fascinated about Christianity. But she wasn't. She was just interested in ideas. She just wanted good dinner table conversation, and none of it, at the end of the day, seemed to matter. Once I said, oh, that's very interesting, and so things moved on. And it was that sense that the Greeks were very much like that. They were just interested in ideas, you see? And so when we ask that question, what is the good news? And if we just put it up there as an idea, well, people say, well, that's very interesting, and here's what I think, and da, 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 you see? And actually not drawing people to the very heart of the gospel, which is encountered when we encounter Jesus Christ for ourselves, because that is the very heart of our faith, is this living encounter with Jesus Christ. And it seems to me, powerfully, that we've lost sight of that in the church. We've lost sight of it. I can't tell the number of times I've heard of people talking of God in a completely abstract way. Well, what do we mean by God? And we say, oh, well, this great force or this great love. But actually, for the Christian, we want to say, if you want to know what God is like, look at Jesus Christ. Look at Jesus of Nazareth. There is God made flesh. There is God. Not an argument, not a philosophy, not a set of words. But God made flesh, present amongst us, revealing himself to us. And so as those Greeks, Paul kind of, you know, he wandered around the city and he found, they said that they were hedging their bets. You know, they're obviously spread betters in a big way with the Greeks. You see, they had a god for this, a god for that, a god for the other, a god for the other. And just in case we've forgotten something, here's an altar to an unknown god who'll be for the god that we've forgotten all about. And I sometimes wonder if, in a sense, a lot of our, frankly, at times vacuous talking about God actually is that we've lost sight of, at the very heart of our faith, Jesus Christ, the one that we've kind of forgotten. Jesus says this. He says a quite remarkable and incredible thing. He says, if you love me, keep my commandments. Now, I don't know if that's struck you as an utterly remarkable thing to say. Because we just hear at the beginning of the service, as we always do, you know, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. These are the first and the second commandments, and everything hinges on these, you see. But here is Jesus saying, if you love me, do what I tell you to do. In other words, he's the total heart of authority for the Christian life, is to be found in obedience to Jesus. This is really the very nub of what it means to be a Christian. To be someone who loves Jesus and somebody who therefore obeys Jesus. This is the very heart of what we call discipleship. Somebody, it's basically a community. The church is meant to be a community of people who deeply love Jesus and will do everything that he asks of them. He is their very life. Jesus actually says that in that gospel reading that we read. And we, of course, remember it every time we come here. Why do we come to the Lord's table? Because Jesus is our life. Jesus is our life. And without the Eucharist, without the bread and the wine, without his body and his blood, we are not the church, and our lives are disconnected entirely from his. I am the vine, he says, you are the branches. Abide in me. And so this community of disciples is the very heart, really, of what the church is called to be. And there's a lovely saying that I read recently, and I think this is so true. He said, basically, if you have church, you won't necessarily have disciples. But if you have disciples, you will always have church. I think there's a great truth in that. Actually, basically, if there's a band of people who are utterly committed to following Jesus and being obedient to Jesus and deeply love Jesus, church will always happen. And I think we've tended to get it the wrong way around. We've kind of tended to say, come along to church, be part of church, and then maybe, you know, if you're really keen, you know, you can become a disciple of Jesus. But actually, Jesus doesn't expect that. He just calls people to follow him. That's what the church is. The church is the community of people who are called to follow Jesus. So what is this? You know, as we face some, let's be frank about it, the meltdown of the church in our age and in our diocese, let's be bold about it. I spent quite a bit of time with Bishop Justin when we were at General Synod, and I really liked him because basically he just didn't fluff around in his language. You know, he basically said, let's face the facts. Let's be honest about the situation we're in, because if we're not going to be honest about it, then frankly, we haven't got a firm foundation to begin anything on, you see. So let's be honest about it. In this complete situation of meltdown, you go, oh, help, all is lost. Well, no, it's not. It's not lost, because Jesus is still calling people to be disciples. And I'll conclude really just with a reminder of a dear old friend of mine in England who I think got this more than the vast majority of vicars. And he was Robin was a vicar in a very rundown part of Bradford. And when he inherited his church, it was a big Victorian pile and a leaking roof. And the congregation was 6 old ladies and a dog, literally. I think there was actually a dog there, if I remember the story correctly. And the rain poured in through the roof. It's a crack barn of a place. And you think, all hope is gone. You're saying, well, by the time Robin left that parish, they had a new purpose-built building. They had 250 people worshipping there every Sunday. You see? There was one thing that Robin ever preached, and it was Jesus, all the time. And he basically used to say to me, he said, Eric, there's only 3 sermons you should ever preach. He says, number one is, come to Jesus. You see? Number two, if you've come to Jesus, come closer to Jesus. And number three, if you came to Jesus and you've wandered off, come back to Jesus. And there was a delightful simplicity about the message. People knew the good news, and it was a wonderful church. I was never part of it myself, but it had a tremendous ministry and continues to have an ongoing ministry. At the heart of what we're called to do is this simple thing that Jesus says, if you love me, keep my commandments. And if you keep my commandments, I will send the Holy Spirit to be with you. And what's more, the Father and I will come to you and make our home with you. I think that's a beautiful picture. I just want to leave that with you.